Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
We play down to one. Today, the final day of the Bad Take Boulevard Bracket Edition. We've had the 16 worst takes of the 2022-23 season. We play down to a champion here in the next 15 minutes. It's not only Championship Monday in college basketball, it is Championship Monday on the Bad Take Boulevard Bracket. Two semifinals, the final to come, and one champion just moments away from being crowned. All right, Joe George, let's get it started. What's our first semifinal of the Bad Take Boulevard Bracket?
All right, we'll start with our 1-4 matchup here. Number one seed, Yankees fans chanting, "We want Houston," before getting swept. The 4 seed, Kendrick Perkins, saying that the Warriors would never win another NBA championship after Steph Curry signed his new deal.
That's a really good one. I like the matchup. I just think that the problem for me is that one is already finalized. They wanted, they got, and they didn't like it, as opposed to it's open-ended because we haven't seen the Warriors win another one yet, right?
Well, this was before they won last year's title.
Oh, okay. All right, so then they're both finalized. Yeah. All right, because I thought he meant we took this one from after they, because I think he's also been on record saying they won this one.
Oh, no, he said it. Yeah, he said it again. Yeah, it's been noted he said it again. In case they win another.
So I'm just clarifying which time he said it. So now both of them are finalized. Both of them are really bad, and that's why I think it's a good matchup. But, I mean, for me, the extra caveat is the fact that it is New York, it is Yankee fans, and it is coming directly at Houston to once again be delivered dinner with a kick right in the jimmy. So I tend to lean more that the Yankee fans wanted, and then they got swept in the process. So that's, I guess I'll lean more towards the personal satisfaction it is whenever you stick it to Yankee fan.
Did they put "We Want Houston" on the championship rings?
They did. Oh, no, on the ring. I don't know, the ball, right?
They put it on the ball.
The gold ball? I didn't see it on the rings.
Okay, I could just be making that up.
Well,
it's
weird.
I wasn't very confident.
They had ring night for game two.
Uh-huh.
But for all the graphics that they did on TV, it was like the silhouette of what a ring looks like, but it didn't have any of the detail.
I think it's because they were keeping it from getting leaked.
Probably right.
Yeah, they didn't let anybody see it because they wanted that to be like the great unveiling, and they didn't, like, there was zero leaks about it until the next day or that night.
Yeah.
So I think that had something to do with it. Look, I think We Want Houston is going to go down like on the Mount Rushmore of bad takes in Houston sports history. We Want Houston, We Want Houston, and then they get swept by Houston. Their season comes to an end. They lost their baseball lives in 2022 to the Houston Astros. The Kendrick Perkins one, I think that these are very similar in terms of bad takes, and then they were awfully wrong. But one has more of a local feel versus Kendrick Perkins having more of a national feel. We do local sports radio. For me, it's We Want Houston advancing on to the championship game coming up here in a moment.
Joe?
Yeah, I think I totally agree. I mean, it's bad, but also, you know, the thing with Perkins is what was Klay Thompson when Steph Curry re-signed this deal? Like, Klay Thompson hadn't played basketball in like 2 years, basically. Yep. Draymond Green has become a less effective player consistently on offense, and, you know, I kind of get why everyone hated on Andrew Wiggins when they first got him. Like, he wasn't a great basketball player, and, like, he really, the way he contributed to the title run last year, he never did that before. So I think this is Yankees fans by far.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, now I think people, because they questioned it at the time, and then, like you said, Joe, we've never really seen Andrew Wiggins perform at a level that he was expected to perform at, and then all of a sudden he did. And when he did, it changed a lot of people's thinking, and then they realized that without him, what they're seeing right now is that he became a really vital cog in this puzzle, and they're getting him back. And this isn't an injury. This is a chance for them to, again, tell Kendrick Perkins he's wrong. Because I think that if you get Andrew Wiggins back, Golden State has as good a chance as anybody of winning the West this year. Because that's just how good they are and how their championship DNA works. When the playoffs come around, they flip another switch. But I think that the local appeal of being able to stick it to Yankee fan every time you get a chance is too great to pass on.
Andrew Wiggins has been a DNP broken heart for how long now? Three weeks?
It's been 22 games.
That's a lot of games for DNP with a broken heart. That's rough.
All
right, so it sounds like We Want Houston advancing.
Do you want me to make you feel like a terrible person or just pass on that?
Yeah, made me feel terrible.
Okay, so there was a lot of reports about like what was going on. Shams Charania reported today that as he returns, actually his dad's been sick.
So he had a broken heart.
Well, I'm just saying. Well, yeah, but that's not what you're alluding to.
Wait a minute. So Mitchell Wiggins was under the. He's
like very
Ill.
Sick. Yeah,
he's very sick. All right, but now does that also debunk the other rumors that are out there that started this leave of absence?
Great question.
That's why I ask him.
Yeah,
I feel like a terrible human being. I feel like I am someone who speaks the truth, tells it like it is, calls it like I see it.
If it's a combo platter, it's more likely that I would be more sympathetic to the length of time he's missed. But even still,
I don't want to pick between the two either.
No,
I don't want to pick which one it is.
No, it's a tough situation.
It's a hard spot.
I mean, look,
if you don't know, Google it. But it's a tough situation. Injured? No. Hurt? Yes.
We've seen players retire from sports because their wives cheat on them. It happened to Ben Zobrist. Yeah, his
former Astro farmhand great.
His wife got with their pastor, and he never played baseball again.
That's a rough one.
All right, let's go.
Not a good book.
Let's segue to the next semifinal.
All right, our last one here on this or the other side here, our 2 seed versus 3 seed. Because the committee got it right. Bart Scott, our 2 seed, saying the Chiefs will miss the playoffs after trading Tyreek Hill versus the 3 seed Desmond Howard, predicting Texas A&M would win the 2022-23 National Championship game in college football. Just a reminder, his final four was Texas A&M, Pittsburgh, Baylor, and Michigan.
Who beat Jake Asmunds? He would trade number 2 for Dak.
The Yankees.
Yeah, the Yankees did last week.
Oh man, that should have been a championship matchup. That was the national championship.
Just stay tuned 4-7. He'll give you something that'll be a 1 seed.
3-7.
Whatever.
at least get the time right, Joel.
Yeah, it's my bad. I just was supposed to be drinking someone's tears or something like that when the little red weasel started to really spout off on Friday when Andrew lets them do whatever they want to do. Andrew's like the Steven Silas of that locker room sometimes. He just lets them run amok.
And then he cries whenever he doesn't get them to play.
Yeah. this is good, but because both should know their sport. My first gut feeling on this was it's worse from Desmond's perspective because it wasn't just about A&M.
Yeah.
It was about all the teams he had remaining and how bad all of those predictions were. As opposed to Bart Scott making a really bad prediction, but that was it. I think the fact that you lose so much more credibility when, if you would have said, hey, I picked A&M to win it all, but the other 3 teams I picked were 3 teams that were sitting there or 2 teams that were in it, you'd go, okay, I get it, because you saw a lot that just didn't materialize with potential with A&M. But the fact that every single team you picked, you were like, he said he picked who?
Yeah.
I think that makes it worse.
Also, whenever Bart Scott said this about the Chiefs, he wasn't the only one saying it.
Because everybody was Russell Wilsoning.
There was quite a few people that thought the Chiefs were going to be dropped down a tier, to be quite honest with you. Whereas no one was thinking, Pitt was going to make the Final Four. A&M turned out to be a really bad pick to make the Final Four. Baylor, same thing. So Desmond Howard, because of the volume of more misses, and also because it was a more unpopular take, and he swung and missed more than Bart Scott because he was kind of – it was a popular, hot take that turned out to be
like we said last week, he wasn't the only one that was down on the Chiefs.
Right.
So you can get – it lends itself to having a little bit more credibility than a guy that's supposed to have a ton of credibility on college football swinging and missing on the entire Final Four.
Yeah, I got to go Desmond. Sounds like Blinkers is going
too.
Desmond.
Yep.
Joe George, where you at?
Yeah, Desmond too, because even though Michigan made it, it's Baylor and Pittsburgh and A&M, it's not even like they finished second in their conferences, I don't think.
No. The Pitt pick is just completely outrageous.
A&M didn't go to a bowl, right? Then they went 5-7.
Yeah, they were awful.
Yeah.
Baylor barely made a bowl, I think. They went 6-6, perhaps.
And I don't know if Pittsburgh made
it. Miranda was okay.
Who's that, Pitt?
Pitt. Yeah, Pitt. They weren't very good either.
Yeah. I think their quarterback got hurt. But not that it excuses Desmond. All right, Desmond Howard is off to the final. So it sets up our final what, Joe George?
Yep, final game. Yankees fans chanting, we want Houston. Desmond Howard predicting Texas A&M and his awful Final Four.
Both have a local feel to it, but nothing feels as good as being able to crap on Yankee fan. the winner of this whole thing is head and shoulders, the Yankees chanting it and then getting their dinner handed to them in a sweep I mean, it'd be one thing if it was a competitive series and you were in it, you had a shot, and you looked like you had momentum, and you know, and riding off when you were saying it, when they were winning their first round, you're like, oh yeah, man, they're the hot team. They could do some things. No, you could lay down and play dead and understand once again on the family tree who your daddy is. I think, to me, this is one where the Yankees take it all.
Yeah, I think this is the year that this you have a dominant take. You have a dominant bad take that is easily going to run away with this tournament. They are the UConn of Bad Take Boulevard bracket, where they've been winning every matchup by double figures,
yep.
Where they're going to steamroll. I hope they don't steamroll San Diego State, but they steamroll their competition in the championship. Desmond Howard belongs here. Desmond Howard belongs in the championship game of Bad Take Boulevard. But he does not win the championship game of Bad Take Boulevard. You can't beat We Want Houston in a year that the Astros win the World Series when it's Yankee fans wanting Houston and they get swept in the ALCS. Joe George, you can cement it here, but it sounds like we have our first ever champion of the Bad Take Boulevard bracket.
Here's the thing. If these losers would just shut up, then it wouldn't be such an easy win for them for being just the worst fans on the planet. The fact that we're still getting bleep Altuve chants when the Astros are nowhere near their stadium opening week, this team swept you clowns, and you're still going on and on and on. It's all that fan base has is to yell bleep Altuve and we want Houston. And I hope they get him again because I love the fact that the Astros have beat the Yankees every single time in the playoffs. So this is the clear winner. And frankly, I wouldn't be shocked if they do it again and they're the number one seed next year because they're all morons.
Like, it's one thing to say we're living rent-free in your apartment. No, we're living rent-free in every high-rise, penthouse, most expensive properties in the city and in the surrounding area and the state of New York. Like, the Astros are living so rent-free in Yankee fans' heads with no plans of selling or giving up and renting that it is just – it's you are, like, chiseled into Yankee fans' psyche, and I love that.
Me too. Congratulations, Yankee fans. Your chant of We Want Houston will be having the parade in the Bronx
Nick Wright,
tomorrow.
By the way, just made his first chance at getting into next year's bracket.
Really? Well, that's great. You know, my least favorite thing of this bracket is we've not been able to talk about the bad takes for the last 3 weeks. So I cannot wait to hear the Nick Wright bad take that we'll talk about on Thursday when the real Bad Take Boulevard is back. But congratulations to Yankee fans, champions of the Bad Take Boulevard bracket 2022-2023.
Buzz that, John Boy.
For chanting, we want Houston. Weigh in. How do you feel about Yankee fans being crowned the champions of Bad Take Boulevard? All right, men's Final Four. Another champion will be crowned in Houston later tonight, UConn or San Diego State. A blue blood versus not a blue blood. Who's going to win it all? Also, how about this LSU and Iowa and Caitlin Clark and You Can't See Me and all this stuff going on with the NCAA Women's Championship yesterday? It's the Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pitch 25 on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Pitch 25. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live, Pitch 25 in Edo. This is spot to be when you get off work on a Monday. Spot to be to watch some college basketball tonight. Spot to be when you want to watch some Astros baseball tonight. You want to start with the men's Final Four or the Women's National Basketball Championship?
You call it. I can deal with either one.
But I can't see you. Well, let's talk about Caitlin.
You can't see me. I'm right here.
That was the move.
Oh.
That was the move, the LSU.
The John Cena?
Well, that was Caitlin Clark's move, I believe. Caitlin Clark is the one who does. I think she does that to, like, other people. Like, has done it throughout the tournament to other. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. I haven't watched much of the NCAA Women's Basketball Tournament. I've seen a few highlights here and there.
Andrew and I have.
But I believe Caitlin Clark. It has a reputation for doing the You Can't See Me.
She's done it previously.
Right.
She did it during the Elite Eight, I believe it was, whenever they beat Arkansas.
Okay.
But she did it, and she did it very quickly, and the interpretation was trying to figure out, did she do it towards her bench or did she do it towards opponents? Regardless, she's done it. So, and we know that she's crap-talked before because social media had audio of her telling someone earlier in the tournament, too, "You're down 15, shut up," when they were talking to her.
I respect that.
Yeah, and she's made it known she appreciates and likes to crap talk.
Uh-huh.
So I mean, she's not innocent or an angel in any way, shape, or form.
Congratulations to Kim Mullett Robinson. Won the national championship for LSU.
Mullett?
Kim Mullett Robinson. Okay. I think she dropped the Robinson, though. I think it's just Kim Mullett now.
She got into Murph's closet. I know that.
It's better than the alternative?
No, she got into Calvin Murphy's closet because, boy, that pant, that suit she was flashing yesterday was whee, out there.
There's a joke there, but I'm just going to drop it. I'm just going to leave it there. Anyways, Kim Mullett wins the national championship, but everybody's talking about the, you know, the trash talk from the LSU player. Don't know her name. I don't mind trash talk. In fact, I love trash talk. I think trash talk from the moment that a game starts to the moment a game ends, I love it. I think it's part of the gamesmanship. I think it's part of trying to get into somebody's head. I love trash talk. I am also a big fan, though. As soon as you win, it's about you and your team. It's not about the other team. And my understanding is that this player from LSU did this after the final horn. Angel Reese did this after the final horn.
She did it before the final horn and continued to do it after the final horn.
So the game was probably already decided, though, right?
So in the final minute, there was a free throw, and she was one position on the block away from Caitlin Clark, and she started to do it.
Yeah.
Caitlin Clark tried not to look her way. She obviously was trying to be very demonstrative to make sure she saw her do it and then point to her ring finger. And that's fine. I mean, I'm cool with all of that.
Yeah. I'm all right. I mean, it's fine. I don't hate it. I'm more of once you've won, you no longer trash talk because it's not really gamesmanship
like
now.
Now
it's rubbing it in. Yeah. Like, I'm fine with that if it's the second quarter. That if it's the third quarter. But
no
once
question.
The game has been decided, I'm not a huge
so
fan of rubbing
me.
It in, pouring the salt in the wound. I'm not a fan of that. But also, if I'm Caitlin Clark, I don't care. Like, I really don't. And I don't have this hot take about how she shouldn't have been doing that. I wouldn't have done that once the game's already decided. I don't care that she did all that much. And I'm also a huge fan of trash talking when the game's still in balance.
Here's my opinion on it. And please miss me with all of the debate from social media. It was a racial thing. No, it was not. Everybody's saying, well, you know, Caitlin can get away with it, but Angel cannot. Look, what it comes down to is I'm like you. I'm all about what's done is done, and you need to face the music. When everything's going your way and you're doing it to other teams, you also better know right away that the first time things aren't going your way and a team does it to you, you need to suck it up and realize you deserve that, and you need to deal with that too. What I don't like is I'm totally fine with a minute left to play or whatever it was, you know, Caitlin getting a taste of her own medicine. What I didn't like was after the final horn, following her around to continue to do both the Cena gesture and the ring pointing to the finger. You won it. You deserved it. You earned it. You got plenty of opportunities to stick it to her in the process of it. But when the game is over and you're getting ready to go through the handshake line and everything, to instead follow her around to keep doing it, I think that was a bit much.
I think Angel Reese, too, was the LSU player that got a Sharpie in the last few seconds of a previous game and started to draw a ring.
Oh, I didn't know
on her
that.
Finger.
I think it was
the regional final. I think it was a game that clinched their spot in the Final Four.
Okay.
Where she grabbed the Sharpie like in the last few seconds and started to draw a ring on her finger. Once the game's over, once you've won a game, I am a huge believer in you celebrate with your team. I'm not a huge fan of like the tweets where you're attacking the other team, you're pouring salt in the wounds, you're kicking them when they're down. Once you've won the game, it's about celebrating with your team. Over the course of a game and before a game's been decided, talk the trash. Like that's what made Michael Jordan great. It's what made a lot of players great. Is they would talk the trash and get in the
no
heads
question.
Of their opponents.
Larry Bird was a king
part,
of that.
That's part of the game. Part of the game.
And I'm with you on all of that. I believe that you look at what Draymond Green and Dylan Brooks have done and continue to do. Well, there's a ton of bad blood there as well, but it keeps going back and forth. But that's totally different than what we saw here because it didn't look like there was a whole lot of chatting during the course of the game. There didn't look like this ongoing thing from the two best players on each team going at each other. And then all of a sudden, you can deliver the message and handle your business that we handled our business. That's fine.
Yeah.
But then when you want to keep doing it, it becomes almost like you're more focused on that than celebrating this massive victory with your team. And that's where I think at a certain point it got to be too much.
Yeah. All right, men's Final Four tonight, San Diego State, UConn. UConn's been dominating this tournament. I hate to say it, but it's true. They've beaten every team that they've played by double figures. San Diego State. They've been in some tight games, got the jumper at the buzzer to advance to the final, which I thought that jumper at the buzzer, by the way, was the Michael Jordan shot on the other side of the floor.
It really was.
It looked
right.
The exact same
right.
On the other side of the floor.
Yeah, you're absolutely – it's a great call. Look, I thought before this Final Four started, I thought this was UConn's to lose, and I thought that they would do exactly what they've done so far. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, I was extremely impressed with Florida Atlantic, and I thought they were the more dominant team. They were the team that deserved to win for the majority of that game, and then they didn't. They lost. They kind of had some lapses late in the game, and they lose on a buzzer beater. And now they're you fight San Diego State, who's big, who's physical, who's going to try and like to punch you in the mouth, is going to give it their best effort against the UConn team that I just feel is totally more complete, more skilled, you know, more at every single position dominant. You've got 2 7-footers. You've got wing shooters galore. You've got 2 wing players that can ISO and take you off the dribble or finish on the break. And I just believe that this is UConn's year to just run the table in a dominating fashion. Because I look at the teams that aren't here, and that's on them more than it's on anything else. But this sets up beautifully for a team that is hyper-talented, and I think UConn's going to run away with it.
I'm surprised the spread's 7. I thought it would be bigger. I thought it'd be probably, I thought it'd be 9, 9.5, to be honest with you. I thought UConn and Miami were the best two teams that were in the Final Four.
Yeah, I would have liked to see them separated.
UConn was a tier better when they played the other night, when they played on Saturday night. San Diego State, though, is capable of beating any team in the country once. If this was a best in 7, UConn probably wins in 5 or 6 games. But San Diego State takes a game. San Diego State takes a game from UConn in the best of 7. San Diego State has to hope it's tonight. It's this game. It's this first game of what would be like a 7-game series. UConn just doesn't seem to have any holes. They defend you. They're solid 1 through 5. They can score off the bench as well. I think San Diego State's going to have to get into a dogfight, pardon the pun. They're going to have to make it a low-scoring, defensive-minded game. They're going to have to force UConn into like sub-40% shooting. But San Diego State, while UConn and Miami were the best two teams, no doubt, in the Final Four, San Diego State is more than capable of beating any team in the nation, including UConn, once.
Well, that's a great point.
They can win tonight.
When
they
you look
can
at
win
what,
tonight.
You go back to all the way back to when Villanova had the upset of all upsets against Georgetown. When you look at what Butler did and were a 3-point bank shot away from beating Duke. When you look at this tournament more so than any other of these championships and finals that we see in sports, you realize that the upset not only can happen, but it does quite frequently in March Madness. And for one night, it's a great point that anybody can be on their game at a very, very high level for one game. And another team, on the conversely, can just not have it together for one night in one game when it matters the most. And that's what you have to that's what makes this all so fun and interesting, why March Madness is so popular. There's a chance San Diego State, look, physicality-wise, they are going to bang and be physical with the bigs of UConn. But I just think the matchups where they're really going to have problems is their guards and their small forwards for UConn and trying to match up with them San Diego State-wise. Because I think that they're just too talented.
What was the Herb Brooks quote? You know, they would beat us most nights, but not tonight. Mm-hmm. Not tonight. That's what San Diego State. Who do you play for? Play for USA, Coach. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line. 713-780-3776. We've been making mock drafts great again with the Killer Bees because the Texans pick at 2, because they pick at 12. Today's mock, Bruce Feldman of The Athletic. He also mentions Bryce Young and some former coach rival, a coach counterpart, does not love Bryce Young. I'll tell you what he had to say about him and who would we pick at 2 and 12, according to this Feldman mock. Making mock drafts great again. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them all the time. Apollo does a ton of different things and offers a ton of different services that can make a difference in your life on a daily basis. From getting more energy in your life on a daily basis, from either B12 shots or hormone therapy for both men and women, it can be continued in so many ways, to recovering quicker with HGH peptide therapy, to the ways you can get on a workout program and chart your entire progress with a full body composition analysis, to the ways that they now can help you lose weight. Patrick Creighton's a perfect example. He got involved and he got started with all the fine people at Apollo Men's Health. And one of the things is they introduced him to a FDA-certified program in which you can lose up to 6-7 pounds every single month when you get down to it, and maybe more than that. Pat's on a massive weight loss kick, and this has helped him in the first couple weeks of working with the people at Apollo Men's Health to lose even more. Check them out today and all the services they offer. Go to apollomh.com. When you do, you're going to find out that there's a couple of things that are probably going to work for you that you've been dealing with, and you're going to want to set up a first appointment. You can do that right there on the internet, on the website. And when you do that, you're going to also find out most major insurance is accepted and there's discounts for military personnel and first responders. Then mention my name, Joel Blank. Get a free B12 shot or body composition analysis on your first official visit and let the process go from there. Tell them what you're trying to do, where you've been lacking, and what you want that you haven't been able to find. They're going to put you on a program that works and get you the results that you are after and that you desire. They take care of people on a daily basis. I love it because they care about their patients. Be the next in line to find the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow. Live from Pitch 25, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live at Pitch 25 in Edo, Blankers and Branham. We make mock drafts great again on the Killer Bees. And this today's mock draft we're going to look at, Bruce Feldman of The Athletic, which Feldman got some quotes from like rival college football coaches, things like that, and there were some complimentary things to say about Bryce Young. There was a couple things not so complimentary. But at number one, Carolina does the odds-on favorite thing here. They take C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud goes to Carolina. He's the quarterback of the future for the Panthers. Number two, everybody's, you know, this is the favorite. Bryce Young ends up with the Houston Texans. They select the Texans at number two. But one of Bryce Feldman's quotes that he pulled from one of these rival coaches was, his size scares me because against us he didn't really escape. We ran him down three or four times. We've got some good athletes, but those are the athletes that you're trying to run away from at that level. I don't really think people get give enough credit for his feet, blah, 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 blah. He slid protection really good. I zero blitzed him a bunch thinking, screw it, let's hit the quarterback as many times as I can, but he did such a great job of seeing it at the snap. That's a good thing, right? This other one, if he's got time, he's going to kill you. Good thing about Bryce Young. But here was the negative for Bryce. We changed significantly scheme-wise before we played him. We ran fire zone, cover zero, really heated him up. I don't think he saw it that well. When they're athletic 6'5 dudes running down your throat, I'm not sold on him. I would take CJ before him. So, again, this is a college rival coach. How they played Bryce Young, said they ran a lot of cover zero, basically trying to get pressure on Bryce Young and force him to beat him with his arm and reading defenses, things like that. And he said because we had such good athletes, didn't have great success, says he's not really sold on Bryce Young because of that. And quite frankly, that's the biggest fear with Bryce Young. How does he look going up against NFL competition every single game? Yes, the SEC is very good. Now, he does have some built-in advantages when he plays at Alabama. That's going to be the knock for Bryce Young until we find out it's no longer a knock for Bryce Young.
I don't worry at all for one second about the fact that he's going to be able to read defenses. This isn't what this is about. I have total confidence that he's an intelligent and tangible quarterback. But the major concern is not just what everybody talks about, just the size and the weight. It is the fact that, like you mentioned, you're not dealing with a leg up on every other team you play all season long because you're Alabama. You've got five stars across the board, and you've got second string guys that should be starters across the board, across the country, and maybe your first and second stringers that are all going to be NFL players at some point. So every single year that doesn't change. We know that the landscape of football changes from month to month, from year to year, but if you're here one week as the best team in football, whether it's next week, next year, or a couple years down the road, the landscape changes. That's going to change. You're not going to have talent around you the whole time. You're not going to have the best team on paper every single week. And with that, you're going to get hit in the mouth. And you're going to hit consistently.
Uh-huh.
And not everybody can be as lucky as Tom Brady to have the run where he had, where he basically was untouchable except for a push or a fall down here or there. And you're going to take shots. This Texans team is not good enough. It's not deep enough to where you're not going to have chances and opportunities to have your quarterback hit. And he's going to have to take those hits.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to keep on ticking. And that remains to be seen.
I think that's the NFL in general, though. Like the Texans have an offensive line that should be capable enough with good coaching. They could be schemed up enough to where you're getting the ball out of his hands quickly. But honestly, getting the ball out of his hands quickly is kind of like why I see this opposing coach's point of view. Because, yeah, I think Bryce Young's going to be great at reading defenses, too. I think he's a really sharp cat. I like Bryce Young a lot. I know sometimes people get that twisted because I think Levis is the best draft prospect in this draft. But I would be very content, very happy with Bryce Young. I would be all in with Bryce Young. But I always talk about quarterback play, too. We overrate the highlight and underrate the lowlights. Like, you need consistent play. It's why Tom Brady was great. Look at Tom Brady's highlights over the course of his career. Look at Mike Vick's highlights over the course of his career. Which highlight reel is better? Mike Vick. Like, highlights don't really translate to quarterback play. And that's not to say I think Bryce Young's like a highlight quarterback and just a buzzy quarterback like that. But one thing that I do fear about the size, even like absorbing blows aside from that, is what does it look like whenever the other team sends two untouched blitzers and all of a sudden you have the defensive line, two blitzers coming off the side, and Bryce Young is looking at 6'5", 6'5", 6'5", 6'5", 6'5", and trying to get the ball out of his hands like that on a slant route.
Look,
I don't know how that's going
to
work.
It remains to be seen. Now, it's not a deep ball because I have concerns about his deep ball and his accuracy on the deep ball. But you know what? It, at least from a shorter throw perspective, it's important. But when you're a shorter quarterback too, it also becomes a bigger issue because we've seen how Drew Brees called the majority of his looks and reacted through the bottom part of his face mask. He never even saw through the eye slots of his face mask because that's what he was up against with the big-time talent of height coming at him all the time. I don't know that anybody can is going to have the escapability or to get out of a play when it's 6'5 across the board on a massive all-out blitz.
But well, I don't want escapability. I want a guy who can throw quickly over the middle.
But you're right. What I was going to say next, though, is he still has to be able to find the window and be able to put the ball where it needs to be when he is limited by what he can see. And that's a big issue, right?
That to me, honestly, is a bigger concern about, like, injuries. Because, I mean, I don't know if there is – because I understand where you're coming from, and I know that that's, like, something that we hear about a lot. I don't know if we've seen small quarterbacks versus big quarterbacks, injury with small QBs, injury versus big QBs, and having any sort of, like, correlation.
But I think that when you're talking about the structure of the roster right now and the depth that the Texans don't have, that's a factor. And then on top of that, the other factor is I'm not talking about getting lit up on a sack. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about how many times he's going to take a hit after the ball leaves his hands.
Yeah.
And he's going to have to get up and keep on going. And I don't think that no matter what you think is setting him up for the NFL – at Alabama, he just didn't take the hits from the standpoint of the magnitude of the hit or the multitude of the hit that he's going to take when he's playing for the Texans, whoever he's playing for.
Probably not. No, probably not. I think it's a fair criticism. But from like a football-only criticism, because like being a small quarterback and being small in stature, I understand like health reasons and health concerns and sustainability of being able to suit it up every single week. But I'm trying to look at it from the 60 minutes. Like, what does Bryce Young look like as my quarterback for the 60 minutes that he's on the football field? I believe Bryce Young's going to be one of the most well-prepared quarterbacks in the league.
Sure.
You hear all the stories about him and film work and how he taught Bill O'Brien the offense when Bill O'Brien first got there. You talk about Nick Saban, about how he watched the game film before they ever watched the game film as a team. I'm not worried about any of that stuff.
Those are the intangibles.
But I think you have to make the simple plays nonstop to be a really good quarterback. Tom Brady made a living making the simple play forever. Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, is talking about it last week on NFL Network, saying that we need Josh Allen not to run as much because you cannot run in the NFL and have a sustainable winner. It cannot be the way you play week in, week out to be a sustainable quarterback in the NFL. Sean McDermott's one of the best football minds out there and is telling you we can't have our quarterback running around all the time. So Bryce Young's really good at that, but Bryce Young is not going to make a living in the NFL because he's really good at running around all the time and escaping trouble and improvising and all that. He has to be able to beat you from the pocket. If there's six dudes coming down your throat, I have to be able to trust that Bryce Young can make that slant route to find the receiver with the blitz coming. Otherwise, they're going to get killed.
It's read versus reaction. You can read and be the most well-prepared, well-versed quarterback that has done your homework, that is doing everything that you need to do prior to the snap. But how are you going to react when there isn't anything that in pre-prep sets you up for what you have to deal with? And are you going to react positively? Are you going to be able to deliver the football where it needs to go? Or understand this is one where I just got to get down and eat it?
Sure.
But if you continually put negative plays on the board and you set your team up for tougher situations, deeper, second down, third down situations, and you're not able to complete the ball or get rid of it to your safety valves, that's a bigger issue because it has nothing to do with your intelligence and your ability to understand and read the game.
I heard Cal McNair talk about the other day at the NFL owners' meetings how the commissioner was telling them how the margin of victory in the NFL has like never been smaller. Like the games have never been closer. So the margins are very, very thin when you look at the winners versus the losers. And oftentimes we hear like to win in the NFL, you got to convert in critical downs, third and shorts, your fourth down conversions, things like that. Like Bryce Young is going to be a great quarterback in the NFL. It's going to be defined based on if he can convert the third and five on a quick slant. If on a third and three, he can convert a quick out over a big offensive line. I trust that Bryce Young's going to make some great plays. I trust that Bryce Young's going to be able to avoid the rush sometimes and pull, like, you know, do the whole Houdini like they called Deshaun Watson. But even like Deshaun Watson, I thought had tons of negative plays. That's why I thought he was a little bit overrated. I don't think Bryce Young is going to be great or bad as an NFL quarterback based on all of that stuff. Where he's going to be a winner or not is if he can convert the third and three 5 yard slant, the 6 yard out, whenever you have to have it on a critical down. And I don't trust a small quarterback as much in those situations.
I also think that when we talked about what David Carr went through, this is different, but it's also similar in the fact that you're probably going to make the wrong read and you're probably going to react the wrong way more times than not in your rookie season. What are the ramifications? Is it just from a team perspective that you set them back because you either got through a ball that got picked or set your team back by down and or distance? Or is it the fact that, furthermore, you also set yourself up to get in a really bad predicament to get crushed a couple more times as well? Those are all going to be part of the overall factoring in on this situation. I just think the read versus the reaction is where it's going to be hyper – it's barely going to be hyper-analyzed.
I don't even think it's a read because I think he'll make the right read.
That's what I'm saying.
Is he going to be capable to throw over 6'4" offensive lineman and 6'6" defensive tackles?
Like I said, you can make the right read and know that it's the slant route that you got to deliver the football to, but what you're not reacting to is that the athleticism and the size of the guys that are going to make the plays or come off the edge untouched are going to make it tougher.
Or just the physics of a 5'10 quarterback getting it over a 6'3" center and a 6'5" defensive
tackle.
Like
I said, David Carr got gun shy because he just got crushed too many times. Bryce Young could get gun shy in a different way because now he's got happy feet because he's constantly thinking they're coming. And now how do you react and how do you stabilize not only your thought process but your reactionaries so that you don't keep doing that over and over again?
Let's take a look at the rest of the top five in Feldman's draft whenever we come back, and then we'll play the practice we've been doing. What will we do at number 12 based on who is available in this particular mock draft? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Pitch 25 in Edo on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.